Welcome to Doctor Who On Target. The podcast where we discuss the target range of classic Doctor Who novelisations from the 1970s and 80s. Those long ago days where, if you missed Doctor Who on TV, you missed it forever. Unless, of course, you bought the Target novelisation. So, join us, jump aboard the TARDIS, set the time rotor for late 20th century Earth, and, with a wheezing, groaning sound, we'll discuss Doctor Who on Target. Hello and welcome to Doctor Who on Target. And this week we are reviewing Knock Knock. David, I don't know if you'd like to make a start on this, but were you anticipating much with this one?
Well, I think we said on our previous podcast that this one had got a lot to live up to.
Yes, yeah.
Because we didn't much care for Thin Ice.
No, not at all.
But I have to say, Knock Knock was rather splendid.
Ah, right, right. Now, when you say rather splendid, is it across all areas you felt that?
Let's have a think about this. It was written by an established playwright called Mike Bartlett. So I thought it had a bit of pedigree there. It had a fantastic guest star in David Suchet.
Oh, yes.
And I thought that there were lots and lots of those, I call them callbacks, but I think other people call them Easter eggs, where interesting things in Doctor Who's past get referenced, and you have to enjoy picking up on all those references. So I enjoyed those this week, and I thought that the Dr. Bill relationship recovered from the setback that it had in Thin Ice.
Yes, yeah.
So all in all, I thought it was rather good.
Yes, yes. Well, that's really interesting because, as we said, you know, we were a little bit felt quite down on Thin Ice. But this one, now, I didn't watch it in my usual way because it was a bit of a hectic week last week. So I actually watched it sort of 1 o'clock in the morning with headphones on. And I opted for this this new BBC sort of 3D sound version. I think it's, somebody will have to tell us if I've got it wrong, but I think it's pronounced binaural or binaural, I'm not quite sure, but it's that 3D sound version. And I have to say, I really enjoyed this episode, really enjoyed it. And the sound was a real treat. It was so creepy, I actually jumped several times throughout it. And the sounds genuinely feel like they're coming from behind you and from, you know, to the side, and the creepy, crawly noises coming out. It was really effective. I will say the most, I think the best thing about this, I'm not very, very familiar with David Suchet, but I thought he was fabulous in it. He was really creepy. He was
Yes, he was. I was going to say, the creepy landlord, because we know the universities in Bristol, don't we?
We do, yeah.
I thought we were going to get a standard creepy landlord story. There was a gentleman who was badly abused by the press called, I think he was called Christopher Jeffries.
Oh, I remember that.
He ended up suing the paper. He was arrested for a murder he didn't commit.
Yes, yeah.
And he ended up suing the papers.
He did, yes.
And I thought, oh, I hope they're not going to do some sort of pastiche of that story. And thankfully they didn't. The other thing I was glad that they didn't do was a pastiche of 10 Rillington Place.
Oh.
Because the landlord's name was John. that's revealed later in the episode. And the name Christy popped up as well.
Did it, really?
As one of the, well, like you see, I think that was a callback to Agatha Christie rather than the serial killer, John Christie.
Yes.
Well, I sincerely hope it was anyway. Yeah. And I thought, oh, this character, his mood turned so suddenly.
Yes, yes.
He said, how do we get into the tower? You don't.
Oh, that...
turned on the student.
He did. That was a really powerful scene, wasn't it?
Fantastic stuff.
Yeah.
And yeah. I'm told, I've read subsequently to the episode being transmitted, that David Suchet didn't even insist upon seeing the script.
Really?
Before he agreed to do it.
Wow.
And he always delivers. He always delivers a great performance.
Oh, I was very impressed with him. Very impressed. You can always tell an actor of real experience and standing. I don't know. I mean, you know, you might correct me on this. Other people might disagree. But I always felt that one of the big differences between the Russell T. Davis era and the Stephen Moffat era was that Stephen Moffat tends to have the money is put on the screen. It really can, Doctor Who now, look filmic, like a Hollywood movie. When it's at its best, it looks lush and expensive, and it looks great. Whereas I think a lot of the old Russell T. Davis ones looked, they could look a bit cheap at times, you know, and a bit, but what they always had was top quality actors, and then the rest doesn't matter. And I felt this year with David Suchet, you know, when he came on and he only had to look at the camera and stand there, and his presence was such that you go, I don't care about the effects in the background. This man is terrifying me, you know.
Well, I think, yes, I think it's the mark of a good actor that you are quite familiar. I know in your particular case this isn't true, but you're quite familiar with their body of work, and yet they can construct a completely different character to anything you've seen before, seemingly effortlessly, but it must take an awful lot of effort to do it. And one of the visual references that I spoke about the last time we recorded, I said that his character looked a lot like Christopher Lee.
You
do you remember? We agreed that he had that look about him.
Yes.
And he had that sort of stillness and sort of suppressed menace about him as well.
Yes.
So I think that comparison was actually quite accurate.
Yes, it was actually. Yeah.
Quite beyond the hairline and the dark eyebrows and the deep hooded eyes, which were also Christopher Lee trademarks.
Yes, absolutely.
And it was a horror movie. The show was a horror movie. It was.
It was very much of that genre. I mean, we'll talk about the ending a bit later, but, you know, we have the classic. I can really see how this would appeal, especially maybe to a younger generation, because it's got this this feel about it. You have a gang of young kids, you know, I shouldn't say that, really young people, students, going into this big old haunted house. You've got the creepy landlord, you've got the strange goings on. It was all there, and I just felt it really was atmospheric. It was really it was spine tingling. I like that. I really like that feel about it.
As you say, the sound that they put on it. There was one bit in particular where quite a few random knocks coming from different places.
That's right.
Around the headphones.
Yes, yes.
As the knocks were repeated.
Because,
of course, knock, knock is the standard Doctor Who joke. Knock, knock, who's there?
Doctor.
And so it was quite a cheeky reference to something we'd all said in the playground in our time. So,
yes
I can understand why it would have a childish appeal. And I thought Pearl Mackie, and I have no idea how old she actually is, but I thought she played a student rather well.
She did. She did.
She's not that old, actually, is she?
No, I think she's
29 now.
29.
To Wikipedia.
Yeah. Yes.
But I had no problem buying into her as a sort of an awestruck student in her first digs.
Yes, yeah.
Oh, I thought it's a lovely little performance, and I thought, coming back to the callbacks, the fact she started calling the doctor grandfather.
Yes.
Do you remember at the beginning you said there's a picture of Susan and I wonder if Susan's coming back?
Yes, yes.
I wonder if the Pearl Mackey character will turn out to be a regenerated Susan.
Well, that...
just throw that one in there lightly.
That's going to... That, what do they say? That's going to set the internet alight again, isn't it?
With I don't know if anyone listens to us, but it should do. But I'm sure I'm not the first person to have that suspicion that the doctor... as grandfather and the Bill character as granddaughter.
Yes.
There was a lovely dynamic. I mean, the doctor quite clearly has boundary issues.
Yes.
He didn't know when to stop and he wouldn't abandon her. It was all very paternal.
Yes, yes.
He wouldn't abandon her to that house.
No, no.
The house itself looked a lot like the same location as Blink. I don't know if that's true. Is that in the house?
I do know. I'm not sure about that.
I only saw it once.
Yeah. it does look similar.
But the thing we spoke about when we recorded Horror of Fang Rock was this Agatha Christie idea of people being in an enclosed space and being bumped off sequentially. And that's exactly what we had this week, which is a classic Doctor Who device. Get people in an enclosed space,
yeah,
and bump them off.
Absolutely. And it worked beautifully, because I loved the who was the character, the musician playing the music with the...
oh, that was Pavel.
Now I really liked that, because he had a turntable, a record player. Mm-hmm. And I think you were expecting, well, I was expecting at least some sort of, you know, I don't know, rock and roll, rap or something to come out. And, of course, he put on a beautiful piece of classical music, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. Which I really liked that. But the way he was creepily held in suspension amongst the fibres of the wood, mm-hmm, was really creepy. I liked that. And it was a lovely touch to know that, what did they say? It was the music still playing that held him there, wasn't it? His mm-hmm love held him mm-hmm there for music. Nice.
And I think the David Suchet character said something like, "Hope has its own kind of cruelty," or something along those lines. And he lifted the needle and he went through the wall. The Pavel character went through the wall. But when he was half stuck in the wall and half out of the wall, that reminded me so much of the semi-formed Cyberman in Earthshock.
Oh.
Do you remember when the Doctor changed the composition of the door? So when the Cyberman broke through, It reassembled itself and the Cyberman got stuck half in and half out.
That was a fabulous effect for the time, wasn't it? It was really good. Yeah, I loved that.
That's an Earthshock throwback, or callback, I should say, or Easter egg, as the people and me say.
Do you know, I'm finding it fascinating that you're picking these up. I mean, I picked up the grandfather one.
Did you pick up Sleep is for Tortoises?
No.
The doctor has a line in the Talons of Wing Chiang.
Oh,
describing why he doesn't rest. He says, "Sleep is for tortoises."
You're right, he does,
and that
doesn't he?
Got an outing as well.
Of course, gosh. It's happening all over. They're buried everywhere this season, aren't they?
I love that. I'm sure there were loads of other resonances with the classic Who.
Yeah.
In there. And I think it's very, very intentional. I mean, even the baddie in this one, the girl made of wood.
Yes.
What was her name? Is it Felicity, wasn't it?
Yes.
She reminded me of the Forest of Cheam. Do you remember, was it Jabe?
Jabe, yes. Jabe,
yes,
in the Forest of...
She had a crush on the Doctor, on the Ninth Doctor.
That's right, and she burned at the end, didn't she?
And there was another... Oh, yes, it was the one with Bill Bailey, the Christmas special with Bill Bailey, when they had a king and a queen made of wood.
They did, yes, yes. That one was the one based on the children's story, wasn't it? It's based on the children's story, through the wardrobe. Something like the doctor, the wardrobe, the lion, the witch, and the wardrobe. It was, wasn't it? Oh, I can't.
We are terrible. The fact we cannot remember anything, but yes, that they had a wooden king and queen in that.
Yes.
Well, and I'd tell you something else that I thought was fabulous, and you've sort of mentioned them already, but the Dryads.
Oh,
they
yes.
They were really good because, I tell you, they reminded me a lot of Cybermats. Because last week we had it was the fish with the lit antennae.
Yes.
And these were obviously of the same, there was the same design, because these had lit antennae as well, the Dryads, and I always thought...
Glowing antennae, yes.
They did. I wonder if they are from the same planet, or who knows?
Yeah.
All sorts of possibilities, but I can only assume it's intentional that they both had the same look to them. I always thought that if you've ever seen a horseshoe crab looks a lot like a Cybermat, and these sort of scuttled when the Cybermats turned into proper insects.
Yes.
Ceased being toys.
Yes.
Had a definite look about it, and they had the same function because they were small, nippy, and deadly.
Yes. Yeah. They were great, isn't it? I rather liked the effect of when they were killing people, you know, they just crawled up and then they just absorbed everything, didn't they?
It was like something from The Mummy.
Yes, that lovely Hollywood.
The scarab beetles.
The scarab beetles, yes, yeah. It was lovely, wasn't it? I have to say as well, what did you think of Peter Capaldi's performance in this?
Well, I always enjoy Peter Capaldi's performance, and I thought it was particularly good this week.
He was on.
He was very tenacious. He wouldn't let it go.
No.
He was funny without being intentionally funny or written to be funny. He was quite effortless in the way he carried that element of the Doctor's character.
Yes, yeah.
The interfering grandparent.
I think...
super.
Yeah, he was, wasn't he? He was really bouncing with energy, I felt. It was... It was lovely, and I did think he was quite funny in, as you said, not it wasn't written funny, but what some of the things he was doing, and it seemed a lovely contrast with David Suchet's character.
Mm-hmm.
That seriously, it's almost as if he'd gone, right, I'll go funny because we've got the serious creepiness on the other side. So I don't know, it just worked really well, I thought. And I also really liked, not many of the student characters came across that strongly, but you wouldn't expect that. They haven't got time to develop them there. So that's no complaint at all. But I really did like the mother figure. Well, she was the mother originally, wasn't it? Felicity, you've already mentioned her, played by Alice Hukin, it says here. Now, I loved her voice. It was quite faltering, and she sounded like somebody of that age. I don't know why. Did you think she was
certainly had a very old-fashioned look about her?
Yeah.
It wasn't only the way that they'd processed the digital image. She had a sort of, I don't know, a very classical look about her.
Yes,
didn't she? She had a very distinctive face.
She did.
When she was out of the wood, well, I'm assuming that when she was in her wooden form, it was CGI, but it could have been a costume. Presumably, everybody had to play to an actress who was actually there, but I think that the character is computer generated.
Oh,
but yes, you can see her through that effect, can't you?
Oh yes, absolutely. Yeah, she looks. It's really so well done, isn't it? I was really impressed with that.
I think the other thing that I liked this week, although it was another cliche to the ending, this was a Love Conquers All ending, wasn't it? Where the mother and the son are consumed for the greater good. So it was sacrificed for love. And I was glad that the screwdriver didn't resolve everything.
It doesn't,
and I'm glad
it doesn't work on wood, David.
When the characters were resurrected, I'm glad that that came from the character as atonement rather than the Doctor flicking a switch and just getting everyone back again.
Oh, no, that's
very pleasing. And I tell you something else, and I'm probably going to go off into a strange area here because I haven't thought about this for years, but have you ever come across a poem by Alfred Lord Tennyson called The Lady of Shalott?
I have,
yes. You must have done.
Yes.
I thought that when the Doctor threw the shutters open and showed Alice the outside, sorry, Felicity the outside world.
Yes.
I thought, well, that's just the Lady of Shalott all over again, isn't it? Because she sees what she's missing.
Yes.
And I know the Lady of Shalott is cursed, and when she sees anything outside of her looking glass, she crumbles and disintegrates. But I thought, that's the same sort of setup.
That is very interesting you say that, actually. I didn't spot that, but I wouldn't be surprised if that is absolutely correct, because last year I was talking to the head of BBC Drama, and we were talking about Dr. Foster, who which was written, of course, by him. And she pointed out that it was actually a classical Greek myth. And I forget the name of it now, but the story of Dr. Foster is a class. And apparently it's something which he likes to do, to have that essence of a classical story, which you know works. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if this has got the same effect. And it's really interesting that you spotted that.
A literary reference. I'm not quite sure if it's true or not, but the point was, having seen the bigger picture, having seen what was out there, she didn't feel that she could carry on.
Yes.
And so she removed herself and her wicked son from existence, really, and atoned for what her boy had done by releasing the students. She didn't, of course, release the other sets of six students that had been taken on 20-year intervals.
Well, I'm glad that you mentioned that, because I was about to get on to this, the resurrection part, because I did feel, while I was watching it, I was a bit disappointed in the resurrection. I agree with you that it was done not through, as you say, just a sonic screwdriver magic trick or anything like that. You know, there was a reason behind it. But I did feel a bit disappointed, because it's a bit of a motif with Stephen Moffat, I think. And not that I want to criticise him too much. I do think he's fabulous. But, you know, this people never dying. Never damn well die, you know.
It was in his first script, wasn't it? Everybody lives.
Yeah, yes.
It was declared in The Doctor Dances, everybody lives.
Yeah.
And, of course, that's not the reality, is it?
No.
But you're right, there has been a lot of resurrection. Resurrection used to happen in Shakespeare. Characters used to come back, and it used to resolved plays with a very happy ending.
Yes.
But it would be nice if just occasionally somebody stayed dead.
Yes.
But I think Russell T. Davis was on his day as guilty.
Yes.
Because the Kylie Minogue character came back like Tinkerbell at the end of Voyage of the Damned.
Oh, yes, that's true. That's true.
There were a few like that. I know. Well, yes. I agree with you. It's one of the bugbears of modern Who that we can't actually grieve for any of the characters because they don't stay dead for very long.
Exactly. Now, I feel, I felt in this a little cheated by them being brought back, because it just struck me. I mean, you just gave me an explanation which I hadn't thought through at the time. I'm going on one viewing where it was just my immediate reactions, but I thought, oh, it's a bit twee, they're back again, they're all right. But and it occurred to me, they're okay, so the ones that we've seen are okay and resurrected, but all the other sets of students going back all those years, they're still there. Well, that doesn't make sense.
Well, presumably they've been digested.
Yes.
The house has eaten them.
Yeah.
Presumably these meals were so fresh.
Yeah.
They could be regurgitated fairly easily.
Oh,
although the fact that the, I've forgotten her name again, Felicity.
Yeah.
Yeah, the fact that you actually saw the life force pass into her and she glowed does suggest that she had sucked the nutrients out of that particular student.
Oh, gosh.
But, yes, yeah. I suppose it would have been nice for just the Doctor and Bill to have been the only people who escaped.
Yes.
A bit harsh on the students, though, but...
Well,
if they will take cheap deals from a dodgy landlord, then they've got to learn the hard way.
Very good. That's true. Well,
but the other thing as well about the David Suchet's landlord character, who was revealed to be called John, there was a sequence where he didn't know who the Prime Minister was. It was suggested it could be Harriet Jones, it could be whoever it was. But he obviously left that house periodically to go and snare another set of six students, didn't he?
Yes, yeah.
It was just unlucky. It was just wrong place, wrong time.
Yes.
For those six. Well, they wouldn't have had much of a story had he not have been lurking.
Yes, yeah.
But, it did seem quite random that he only left the house once every 20 years.
Yes.
And indeed that the students could provide enough nutrition for his daughter to last these 20-year gaps.
Yes, yeah. Well, I mean...
Then it's make-believe, isn't it? So we just have to accept it's all part of the magic of how the dryads were able to... or how they functioned.
Yes, yeah.
We have to accept that because it's never... going to happen in real life, is it?
Well, I mean, there are more things in heaven than earth, isn't it? Than can be dreamt of in your imagination, Horatio. Sorry, I forgot my Hamlet line there.
There are more things in heaven and earth than are dreamt of in your philosophy.
Oh, I'm sorry, of course. Mm. Yes, that's
something
it.
Like that. Anyway,
yes. I think that's more accurate. I've got no issue with the way the dryads work or what they're like. I just felt that resurrection thing then was, because it puts me in mind, we have this classic, as you pointed out, Agatha Christie type scenario, this mixing of genres, you know, with haunted house horror and all this, and the classic one of the students going in. Now, if we take this back to previous classic Whos, for example, I mean, one of our favourites that we've done recently was Horror of Fang Rock. Now, the people in there are dead, and they stay dead, don't they?
Oh, they do. And they do.
And it's all the more powerful for it, I think. Gives the sound there. I think, anyway, I don't know, maybe our listeners will disagree. I'm not sure, but I feel sometimes, you know, you can't have happy endings all the time, resurrections, people haven't died, no consequences. No, I think part of Doctor Who is the fact of telling stories which have a meaning or show consequences or what happens with someone. Because to me, if you're going to have a story where if someone's hurt, they shed tears and show pain, and you show that's the result of those actions, it should be the same with somebody dying. The result is they don't come back. Yes, by all means, have, you know, the exception now and again where maybe something fabulous could be done to save them. But I don't like the sort of too fantastical element of not having these consequences, which we have in life, I mean. Mm. I don't know if I've gone a bit, I'm not sure. What do you think? You were quite happy.
Well, I think you've made your point, haven't you, that that art should reflect reality.
Yes, yes.
So perhaps it's overused. Perhaps I would agree with you.
Right, right. Well,
and talking of consequences.
Yes.
I must just zip to the end of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Doctor has actually entered the prison.
Oh, yes.
Now, this is worrying me.
Yeah.
Who do we think is in there this week?
Well,
the top pianist. He's put a piano in. It's all very odd. You're obviously supposed to think it's Missy.
Mm.
When he told the story of the house that ate children.
Yeah.
We went from a bit of Beethoven to Pop Goes the Weasel on the piano.
Ah.
All very mysterious, but it must signify something.
It's such a mystery. I'm swinging from, because we have, you know, the things flying around saying it's the Master, it's Missy, we don't know.
Why can't it be the First Doctor? Why can't it be, you know, somebody, I don't know, it's whoever it is, it can't be as straightforward as Missy, surely.
No. No.
If it is, I should be disappointed because I want a really huge reveal.
Yes, yeah.
I do.
It's, I tell you what, it's got to be worth the payoff, hasn't it? It's got
to. It has to.
You know, but I do.
It's got to be someone big.
Yeah, got to be.
I want no one less than Susan.
Oh, do you know, I it would be fabulous for Susan to come back for a little, you know, even just a little sort of cameo, really, wouldn't it?
Mm.
Because
well, it would be lovely.
I felt that opportunity was missed in the 50th anniversary, you know, that lovely little piece where we had, not the 50th anniversary, what was the one prior to it, where we were introduced to John Hurt as the War Doctor.
Oh, right,
yeah,
yes.
And it shows the First Doctor running off. They could have got Carol Ann Ford in there and just done a little scene. That would have been lovely, wouldn't it?
Sure.
But no, that's gone. Maybe he's going to make up for it with this one. We might see something very interesting.
Well, I hope we do. I hope there's a huge payoff.
Yeah.
I really, really hope that. But I would say this week, as I started our conversation, even though we've spoken and even though you've pointed out the shortcomings of the constant resurrection of characters, I still take the view that this week's Doctor Who was rather splendid.
Yes, me too. I really thoroughly enjoyed it. Everything about it was, it was atmospheric, it felt right. It was a sort of pure Doctor Who, isn't it? And we, with classic Who, we used to quick endings, which are a bit, that goes right back to Patrick Troughton and to, well, all through the Doctors we've had that. I'm just pointing out a little bit that I was a little dissatisfied with, but overall, it was thoroughly enjoyable.
Mm.
So, David, what are you thinking of a score?
Well, I can't even remember what the score I gave last week's episode, but I know it was low.
Oh,
I think I gave it 4 out of 10.
I think you gave it a very low score.
It was very mean last week.
I'm going
to try and atone for that myself now. I am going to give this week's episode a massive 8.5.
Wow, that is fabulous. And do you know, we are
most of that is for the two central performances, David Suchet and Peter Capaldi.
And I feel very much of the same. It's a strong 8 from me as well, an absolutely solid 8. Thoroughly enjoyable. Mm. Lots of things. I actually jumped 4 or 5 times. I mean, that's great. I really like that. And so really good story there. I hope now we're building on them. Now, the trailer at the end, we'll just say quickly, I thought looked great. What do you think, David?
This was for the one about the breaths, wasn't it, at the end?
Yes, next week's episode.
It's very strong. And another thing I'm very pleased to see is the fact that Nardole's getting to take a journey with them. We've said it before, but I think he does bring something to the feast. The character, well, he's like the Doctor's Batman, isn't he?
He is Batman.
In the First World War sense.
Yes.
Rather than as the cape superhero.
Oh, no, he's not a cape superhero.
He's like, he's like his support, isn't he? He's like his, I don't want to say manservant, but you know what I'm getting at.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's a great dynamic between the characters, and I'd like to see it played out outside of the university building again.
Yes, I think it's going to be great. It's called Oxygen, and it's written by Jamie Mathiasen, who, now what did he write? Didn't he write that, I'm sure he wrote a read. He didn't write Hyde, did he? Did Jamie Mathiasen write Hyde? I'm not sure.
I don't know.
Oh, well,
Hyde was another similar. That was the one with Jessica Raine, wasn't it? That was another Haunted House classic.
It was, and it was fabulous. I loved Hyde. It was great. Now, what's really intriguing me next week, from what I've seen, I like the setup, I like the scenario, I like the look of it, but also the director is Charles Palmer, who I was...
Jeffrey Palmer's son.
That's it. And I was hugely impressed with his direction of... Human Nature and what were the two episodes?
Oh, there? Family of Blood.
That's it. Family of Blood, Human Nature. Very, very impressed with Charles Palmer, and I know that he shot those all what they term were the effects all in camera? There was no CGI, there was no, it was all done as it was in the camera. And I remember being so impressed with it. So my expectations are really high again for this one. Now, I am aware, David, the last time I said this for Sarah Dartland's one, that I may know what happened. So,
well, I'm going to quote David Suchet on this, because he actually said, "Hope is its own form of cruelty," as he turned the music off and Pavel was absorbed into the war. "Hope is its own form of cruelty." I loved that line.
It's lovely, isn't it?
But let's hope that it doesn't come true with your expectations of oxygen.
Oh, dear, dear. I hope not. Well, we are going to try and get these out on time now, because we are aware that we've been a little bit late with some of them. It's my fault entirely. And we'll get these out in time, but we'll try and get this one. We're looking forward to it. And David, thank you very much indeed. And we'll see everybody next week. Please tweet us at Doctor Who on Target. That's DR Who on Target. Or email us at DoctorWhoOnTarget@gmail.com. That's the end of this episode, and I would like to thank BBC Audio and Penguin Random House for kindly supplying us with preview copies, and to Smerin's Antisocial Club for the use of their version of the Doctor Who theme tune. The biggest thank you goes to you, our listeners.